Hello and welcome to Intrepid Times, your home for narrative travel writing with heart. I'm Nathan Thomas, and alongside my co-host Jennifer Roberts, we take you behind the scenes of some of our most popular travel stories, get you to meet travel writers, and help you discover how you can share your own travel stories with the world. Hello and welcome back to the Intrepid Times Travel Writing Podcast. I'm very excited to be speaking with Ash Bhardwaj, who is the author of the upcoming book, Why We Travel, A Journey into Human Motivation. It's coming out on April the 11th, actually. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, it might already be published. It has exciting endorsements from people as varied as Pip Stewart and Bear Grylls himself. And I can tell you from experience, it is a well, it's both a travel memoir with compelling travel stories from as far afield as Ibiza and Uganda, and also a very intelligent, searching, and very satisfying exploration into why all of us folks listening to this podcast do what we do. So, Asha, I've got a lot of questions for you, but I want to situate your introduction to our audience in one particular moment, which is when you were around 29 years of age, the mother of a friend of yours said to you, "There's nothing less attractive than a 30-year-old ski bum." Can you contextualize that moment of your life? What led you to be in a situation where someone would say that to you, and how did it alter your trajectory going forward from there?
Nathan, thanks very much for having me. Thank you for the introduction. And thank you for starting at quite an intriguing point. So I went to university from a family where not many of my relatives had gone to university. And I'd sort of gone without really much of a plan of what to do. I'd been really interested in science. So my first inspiration, if you like, was science. I was going to go and do chemistry, molecular physics, switched to philosophy, left university without being too sure of what I wanted to do. But travel was part of what I was doing at that time. And if you think about the reasons that most of us travel, we tend to think really about only the motivation of hedonism, the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. And that's the reason that most of us travel most of the time. That's what people think of when they go on holiday or vacation. So I'd spent some time living in Australia and New Zealand. In New Zealand, I trained as a ski instructor, which was just an awesome experience. And New Zealand's a great place to live anyway. And I ended up working in Europe, working first as a ski instructor and then running a chalet in a town called Verbier in Switzerland. And I had a good time there. You know, I was enjoying skiing, and there's a sense of eudaimonic tourism when you do that as well, because there's a sense of purpose, particularly if you're an instructor, you know, you're teaching people. And then if you're living somewhere, it's a different experience of just, you know, being on holiday for a long period of time. But hedonism was still the underlying motivation. But I think hedonism sort of has a shelf life. You only want to sort of spend so long just having a really good time. And ski resorts are great, but I was never going to be the world's best ski instructor or the world's best skier. And after you've done the same kind of fun repeatedly for four or five years, it starts to run out. And I started to think about what I wanted to do. There's a friend of mine who now lives in Wanaka, Doug Stoddart, and his sister, Camilla. And I was actually in the pub with Camilla, I think, and it was her mum, or Camilla referenced her mum saying, "There is nothing less attractive than a 30-year-old ski bum." And I was already thinking at that time of going off to find something new to do with my travels and my time. And I think it was that real intersection of noticing that just having fun wasn't going to be enough. I needed to have a greater sense of purpose and motivation. And that led me on to the next stage of my traveling.
It's really interesting for me reading that your book, your travel inauguration, by and large, took place in New Zealand, which I know I've lost the accent mostly, but that's where I come from. And It's always fascinating reading about your own country. I have family.
Whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Auckland. But my dad lives in Wanaka, and I studied in the bottom of the South Island in Dunedin. So the deep South. My journey is kind of did the opposite vision from yours, from New Zealand to the UK and through Europe, and also came face to face with that same moment, which is, I mean, this is really fun, but there has to be something more to it than that. How did you in your own journey go about connecting with that deeper sense of purpose through travel?
First of all, I think it's really interesting what you say about, you know, you came from New Zealand to Europe in the same way that I went from Europe to New Zealand. And I think what it is we often look for something opposite to what we're used to. In the book, in chapter 6 and 9, I talk about a guy called Ben Timberlake, who wrote an amazing book called High Risk. And he talks about the opponent process theory, which is just kind of like the way you respond to if you have a particular environment, then the way your body reacts is to sort of give you the opposite sensation. So basically, if you drink and have a really good social time and you're out having fun, then your body's response is almost to make you feel awful. That's a very major simplification of it. But I feel that one of the reasons I love New Zealand was the emptiness and the natural beauty. And probably one of the things that I know from my family that have come over here from New Zealand is they love the busyness and cultural age of Europe and being able to bimble around the cities of Europe and see lots very quickly. So I think that motivation about just trying to experience something other and it is unfamiliar to you is quite a powerful underlying instinct in travel. And the first motivation I explore in the book, well, there's 12 motivations, and each one sort of comes from a different route. Some of them are more cognitive, some of them are much more instinctive, and some of them are sort of more tasks, really. Curiosity is the underpinning one, and it's just being curious about what's over the horizon, what's different over there. And you talked about sort of finding more purposeful and fulfilling things. I think service made a big difference to me, and I ended up serving in the British Army Reserve and went to the Philippines, Myanmar, Germany, Kenya, mostly just doing exercises, but also doing things that are known as military aid to civil authorities and working with partners to help them develop their skill in certain areas. So in the Philippines, we're helping them do their disaster response planning. Could we add anything that might help them, a nation that's quite used to doing disaster response planning? And the big moment for me was going to Estonia in 2017. This was 3 years after Russia had invaded and occupied Crimea and was conducting subversive and secretive warfare in Donbass, where they were basically sending in the Russian army unmarked. And after that had happened, other countries that had previously been occupied by Russia were worried that Russia was going to do the same thing to them. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. So they invited their NATO allies to come and train on their areas and in some cases, permanently base, semi-permanently base troops there. So we'd gone to Estonia as part of that operation called Opka Brit. And then I sort of discovered through being there this legacy of Russian occupation. 20% of Estonians speak Russian as their first language. Russia has used and leveraged that population to create unrest in Estonia. Russia has talked about reclaiming lands where Russians live. It's been giving out passports for Estonians. So suddenly, what had been just an army exercise like any other became much more pertinent and relevant, and I could understand what was going on. So that kind of triggered this more current affairs, international relations, journalism exploration in my travel. And I think that's where that sense of purpose came from. Going somewhere, doing something useful by being there, we were deterring a Russian invasion and reassuring Estonians, but also learning through it. And I think a lot of my journalism from that has had that sense of purpose.
It's interesting that specific experience you described. So I'm living now in Poznan in Poland, and there are a huge amount of NATO troops here for the exact same geopolitical reasons that you've described. And I've gotten to know some of them. They're mostly from the US, and they're mostly absolutely thrilled to be here because their previous deployments were in Iraq or Afghanistan, and now they're here, in nice beer bars with no bullets flying around and having a great time, definitely leaning into the hedonism side. But they are also learning about the place, making a real effort to introduce themselves to people to ask questions. When you're traveling with a uniform on, literally or metaphorically, I don't know if you actually were walking around in a uniform, do you feel like you have the freedom to get into a place, to go to a bar, to chat to people, or do you feel you're constantly in that role? You're there, to do a job.
So when we were in Estonia for that exercise, I was only there for a couple of weeks, but I was there in uniform. I was there in the role of being an officer in the British Army Reserve. You're doing it very much as that. But I think, whenever we travel in different guises. We travel through different, we're looking through a different lens whenever we're traveling. And part of that is like the role or task that we take on. So I wrote the book because I was traveling less than ever, and I was trying to figure out what are my different modes, methods, reasons, motivations, and guises for travel. And I've traveled as a to play sport as part of a school rugby team. I've traveled to learn more about the space program. I've traveled as someone trying to engage in fun. I've traveled because I wanted to learn something, basically being a student. I've traveled as a teacher. I've traveled as a journalist, a filmmaker. So I've traveled through all these different lenses. And I think each of them gives you a different insight or just a different motivation, ultimately. So each of them has been tied to a different motivation. And that's what's changed as I've gone along in my travel. What I've then tried to do is think, how can I take the best out of those and apply them to other fields of travel? So by going as a soldier, I learned something about that place, and that helped me develop an insight. And so service was the motivation for going. But later, I then spent 6 months traveling along the Russian-European border in 2018 as a journalist, trying to tell the story of what's going on in this region. And I mean, I wasn't particularly optimistic when I came back in 2018. I was like, I think Russia's really up to stuff and they might try and cause some more trouble. Turned out to be exactly what they did want to do. But by having had that sense of service and developing some empathy, I was then able to go back later as a journalist and use that mindset more. In the book, I reference a woman called Dr. Daisy Fan, and she's referenced in The Psychology of Travel by Andrew Stevenson. And she talks about dependency, five different tiers of dependency in the way we travel. So the lower end, sorry, the upper end of our dependency, we're basically completely dependent on the tour operator and the guides that we're with. We may not speak even to somebody in the country that we visit. That might be being in a resort in Costa Rica, or being in a resort in the Caribbean, or being in a resort in southern Spain, even. You only speak to the people who work in the hotel. And then at the other end, there's kind of what you're doing, which is being a belonging seeker, and you go and live somewhere. You might even learn the local language. You really get part of the lives of the people that are there. You're not just there as somebody passing through and sort of consuming a place. You're giving back, if you like. And I think as much as the guise of travel matters, that level of engagement and dependency really matters. How much you're choosing to understand a place rather than just seeing it as a place for your entertainment and consumption.
Yeah, Andrew Stevenson has done some really useful work. I was fortunate to appear alongside him on the Tony Fletcher podcast a few months ago, and it's from him that I learned the word eudaimonics, which is a great one, merging together that hedonism and that purpose. One of the reasons that a lot of people set out on the door traveling, particularly young folks, but folks of all ages, is self-discovery, to find oneself. The cliche as it sounds, it's very real for a lot of folks, and I suppose it can be described as a curiosity turned inwards. I have that phrase in my notes, and I can't remember if it's from your book or not, or just something that occurred as I was writing. And I was interested to hear you reference in your book the beatniks, your Jack Kerouacs and so on. And their writing I found extremely compelling when I was in my early 20s. I know a lot of people in the literary world scoff at that movement, but it's about as far from being a soldier in uniform as it's possible to be. So I'm curious as to what is your take on the self-discovery travelers, on the beat writers in general?
That's a powerful motivation for travel, self-discovery. But I think by putting yourself in different places, you force yourself to discover more internally, right? So you only get to experience a certain version of yourself when you're in your hometown. When you're in Auckland, everything's pretty similar. Everything's pretty repetitive. If you're in Wanaka, you're in a ski town where, oh, it's warm and then it's cold, but you're not really discovering much new, right? You're not encountering new experience of yourself. Sorry, I'm referencing you here, of course, as you grow up. But then if you take yourself somewhere that feels quite uncomfortable or difficult, you can discover qualities of yourself that you may not have known. And for me, joining the Army Reserve and going through the basic training and then having 30 soldiers to look after, some of whom had served in operations in Afghanistan or Iraq or all the way back to Kosovo and Bosnia, and then going out and having to be a soldier and do stuff in places like the Philippines or Estonia, where people are like, oh, right, you're from the British Army, therefore you know stuff. That sort of forced me to develop my internal skills. So tolerance of discomfort is a really useful skill that you learn in the army. You just sort of have to put a rucksack on, walk a long way, and then dig a hole in the rain. Like, can you do that repeatedly for a week and not sleep much? Well, turns out you can, but when you first do it, you aren't aware of it. And I feel travel does something similar. Can you be on your own in a backpacker hostel in Kathmandu with food poisoning? Well, turns out you can. And I think once you've done something like that, then other things that might be more challenging become more accessible to you. And that goes to how do we choose to travel, the mode of travel, engaging with the place. It's very easy to arrive somewhere and view all of the locals as people who are just out to get you and steal your money and trick you and con you. But it's those different ex repetitive experiences, and you realize actually the world isn't a particularly unkind place mostly. People will be kind to you and people will help you out. I think that matters. On the thing about sort of traveling with yourself, I'm just going to bring up the quote actually from the book. So in chapter 10, which is about wonder, the cognitive mindset that allows us to experience awe, and then awe is the sort of emotion that we have when we encounter certain environments and do certain things. Awe might come from seeing the Milky Way whilst we're out in the middle of the Chilean desert, or it might come from dancing with a group at Glastonbury Festival. So those are all different types of awe. And let me just get this quote that's related to it. So it's from Dan Kiernan in his book, The Idle Traveller. And he's talking about an interview with Paul Theroux. So I think one of the things that really matters in travel and finding ourselves is there's this constant psychological tension in life generally, right? Between individual and shared goals, between what you want and what society or your family or others want. And when you go backpacking, that's one of the few times you can literally just do whatever you want. That can be quite useful. Dan Kiernan in The Idle Traveler talks about the idea that travel's displacement of comfort, routine, and place can allow us to explore that and get a feeling of where does that tension lie? And it allows our minds to come off autopilot. And he thinks that that's why people find themselves whilst traveling, because it opens up this space to start conversations with ourselves as much as with others. It's like we're more conscious of the experience of being alive. And he talks about three things you can do that make that easier. Following a hunch that a journey is the right thing to do. So that's your sort of instinct, traveling slowly, and relying on the kindness of strangers. And that really echoes my own personal experiences of travel. The times when I've just gone, oh, this feels like a thing that I should do now. And then doing that journey, but not having like a tick list of things that I'm just going to see. It's the opposite of sightseeing, right? So it's not just going somewhere and doing things. It's just allowing serendipity and experience to not even guide you. You just kind of bimble your way through it. And Paul Theroux is this travel writer that's written a lot about travel on trains and so on. And Kiernan, in his book, The Idle Traveler, reflects on something that Theroux says. And he says that it allows you to explore the often neglected parts of yourself. If you think about your daily life, when you're wrapped up with work or school or university or family, you just kind of fall back into the patterns of coping and dealing with things that have got you to where you are. And they're vital and they're essential, these sort of patterns of behavior. But by disrupting that routine and going somewhere else, you can then discover the parts of yourself that you don't normally encounter, because they're usually masked by this routine and so on. So that's what I think is where the defining yourself comes from. And the more that routine is disrupted, the more unfamiliar it is, the more likely it is that you will explore those often neglected parts of yourself.
I recently reread Paul Theroux's classic, The Great Railway Bazaar, that was published, I think, in the 70s. And One thing that struck me, yes, it's on trains, and there's so much of what Dan Kiernan said and what you've talked about in there. It's a wonderful read. But one thing I found myself being very nostalgic for, or even jealous of, it's something I've barely experienced, is the complete disconnection he had from all of those patterns and associations. Because now I have my cell phone on, people I work with can reach me, my accountants can reach me, everyone I have ever met knows exactly where I am if they care. So those patterns are almost reasserted, even if you're miles away from home on a train in the middle of the night. Is this something that you think about?
Absolutely. And I think maintaining disconnection is something that can be hard, but there are ways to do it. And really, it's only your own anxiety that you need to get over. When I was backpacking in the early 2000s, the internet existed, but it wasn't used. I might send the odd email every now and again, but I'd go weeks without contacting people back at home much. Didn't have a mobile phone, certainly. Didn't de smartphones didn't exist. And you know what? That was okay. Nothing went wrong. Nobody, if someone really needs to get hold of me, I'm sure they could find a way. And we sort of feel that if we don't maintain that contact all the time, things are going to go wrong. But the other thing is, we don't just allow stuff to happen and take on serendipity and chance. I know London really, really, really well. And yet I still use Google Maps to navigate and get around. I've got out of the habit of just trusting myself and trusting in serendipity and trusting in my own competence. Like, I depend upon my smartphone too much in daily life. So when you go traveling and you're not certain about stuff, it's not surprising that you depend upon your smartphone, because you're like, well, what if I go to a hostel that's rubbish? Or what if I get on the wrong train? And that also means a lot of those experiences of failure, I say failure as in like mistakes and things going wrong and then correcting it, which is a really useful skill to learn. Coping with problems and then finding a solution. That just sort of happens a bit less, I guess, when people backpack now. So there's you're not developing a certain set of skills, but then there's also you're not allowing yourself to be disconnected. And actually, in that same section with Theroux, in the interview with Kiernan, he says that we need to travel on our own, because if we're traveling with other people who we're familiar with, it pulls you back into your usual mindset, which means you can't discover yourself. So that's Theroux talking about traveling with people. If you've got your phone and you're looking on Instagram and you're looking on Facebook and you're WhatsApping people, you're constantly being pulled back into yourself of home, and you're not able to discover a different, often neglected part of yourself. Okay, so what's the solution? Turn off your phone? I mean, it's such a cliche, but that's a very difficult thing to do. I find it hard. I find it really hard to do. So the only way that I have been able to do that is just to go places where it's impossible to use my phone. That's the way I've done it, whether that is hiking up mountains, whether that is, army exercises are good because you're not going to carry a fragile smartphone on you when you're throwing yourself into buildings and ditches and jumping in and out of infantry fighting vehicles and that kind of stuff. Just going on a sort of digital detox. But it ends up being quite convoluted because we're so attached to them and they're so much part of our lives. We're just not used to not responding to something immediately. As soon as I have a thought, I put it down in my phone. As soon as I think of somebody, I WhatsApp them, no matter the time of day or night. And that just didn't exist when I was 20. So finding a way to just get used to that, I think travel is an opportunity.
Agree, and I'm reassured by the fact that we have writers like you, contemporary travelers and authors, who are wrestling with this issue that did not exist when Paul Theroux was doing his epic journey, when Peter Freuchen was traipsing around Greenland. This is a new thing that, a new challenge that we have to figure out some way or other. So, Ash, you've traveled, as a young backpacker, as a reservist. What does travel look like for you now, generally?
So, because the point of the book was for me to figure out what travel do I find most fulfilling, with the added advantage of then being able to tell other people how I find travel more fulfilling, I think what travel for me now looks like, and the takeaway I'd like people to take from the book is, before you think about where you travel, think about why you travel, to really interrogate this before you start planning, before you even start thinking about a destination. Or if you've got a destination that you're instinctively drawn towards in that way Kiernan talks about, then think, okay, how, why am I drawn to that place? And what can I do once I get there? So understanding motivations does two things. One, it helps you plan your trip better, where you're going to go and the itinerary you do. And then two, it helps put you in a specific mindset when you get there. So for people who make their lives out of travel, I don't know if you've ever found, Nathan, when you start to travel a lot, it can become like work. It loses that sense of wonder and magic that it had the first time that you traveled. Getting on a long distance plane stops being an exciting adventure where you can go, oh, wow, they've got little packets of nuts and I can look out the window and see cities and mountains go beneath me. It just ends up feeling like a box between two places. So that sense of wonder dissipates. So it's trying to trick yourself into maintaining that mindset of wonder, excitement, and awe. That's asking questions of no importance. Why is that like that? What is that like that? Obviously, you're not on a Boeing 737 MAX. Like, why is there no door? Why has that disappeared? Bad joke about Boeing planes. The other thing to do is maintaining that sense of wonder when you're in your hometown. How do you make it feel like that mindset of traveling when you're just in London or in Poznan or in Auckland? Because to me, going to Auckland is exciting. To you, it wasn't because you grew up there. To you, coming to London would be exciting. To Windsor, which is where I grew up. But to me, it was just like, oh, there's a castle. Yeah, there's a soldiers marching up and down. But you would think, wow, that's amazing. Why are there soldiers marching up and down? And it's trying to think about what would somebody else find wonderful and exciting about a place. If you can practice that at home, you can do it when you travel. So it's very much about understanding that different travel means different things. I've got a baby now. She is 16 months old. And so my wife and I don't have quite the same freedom when we travel because we've got to look after the baby Lyra. So how do we find excitement and wonder and joy and happiness and hedonism and purpose and service and hope and all the other motivations I talk about when we're traveling with her?
Thank you, Ash. That is really inspiring and useful and completely relevant, not only, I'm sure, to myself, but to many folks listening. The book is Why We Travel, A Journey into Human Motivation. Where would you recommend folks go to get their copy?
So the best place to get it is in your local bookshop because that looks after local bookshops. It's always good. The best place for sort of the marketing and awareness is if you order it off Amazon, because the more people order it off Amazon or other big bookstores, the more they promote it up. So that's better for, my awareness. But I would encourage you, I'd prefer you to order from a local bookshop.
Thank you so much, Ash.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. Don't forget to join us in 2 weeks for another exciting episode of the Travel Writing Podcast. See you next time.